The opinions expressed are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the official positions of the sponsors, advertisers, or presenters. Advertising does not imply endorsement by the sponsors and presenters.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Lighting Controls Podcast. We have another fantastic episode for you today, but before we jump into everything, let me take a minute to remind everyone that today's episode is presented by the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
And it's financially supported by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Also, check out our website. If you have been to our website, we have some new exciting tabs for you to check out. It's not just episodes, news, and a merch store anymore. We've got the Lighting Controls Council tab, which is the Council on Lighting Control Startup and Integrations. We are starting this from a grassroots effort. We're trying to get the best of the best in the industry to help us get this going. We want the word to get out about lighting controls, integrations, and startups. So if you're interested, please check it out. Otherwise, the other tab is trainings. So Ron and I end up getting asked to do trainings all the time. One training, for instance, I'm doing at Leducation. If you're listening to this as it initially releases, you still have time to sign up and check it out. Otherwise, you'll miss it, but that's okay because there are more on the horizon. And this is the place to go to check out to see what Ron and I are doing for outreach and education regarding lighting controls. But let's get into the conversation. So today we have Jason. Jason, do you mind just giving us a quick breakdown on who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm Jason Jeanette. I'm a technical manager at the DLC. I have a background in lighting design. Like you guys, I started in theater. Lived in New York City for almost 20 years. Spent most of that doing theatrical lighting and then switched to architectural lighting. Worked as a specifier in New York for a while and then a spec rep. And then eventually my wife and I woke up in a tiny apartment with two kids and decided to move back to Chicago, where we're from. So we moved here about 6 years ago, and I worked as a kind of a distributor contractor sales rep for a while. And I've been at the DLC for about 2 years, a little over 2 years. My job here is to figure out how to get networked lighting controls into small buildings and help make that process easier.
I think I can speak on behalf of a lot of people, which is really appreciate the effort to do that because I think everybody's trying to figure that out. And, you know, I think it's difficult, but thank you so much for joining us. You know, the DLC is a great resource, but just for those who are unfamiliar with the DLC, do you mind just giving a quick explanation of what the DLC is?
Yeah, so DLC is the Design Lights Consortium. I think of us as a bridge between the lighting world and the energy efficiency world. Our main focus is to administer this list of qualified products. The main list is SSL or LED fixtures. And this really started with a group of utilities in the Northeast wanted to start giving incentives for LED fixtures, but realized that they didn't know what an efficient LED fixture was or what a good LED fixture was.
Sure.
And instead of each utility trying to figure that out on their own and duplicating a bunch of work, they started the DLC and then eventually spun it off. We've had that list for about 10 years. We just published an impact report and I failed to look up the number right before we started.
No worries.
But I think we're looking at like 100 megawatt hours of impact.
Wow.
And electricity saving of that time. So like it's made a big, big impact. As you guys know, like, you know, the LED transition or revolution is moving. It's rolling. It's kind of going on its own now. So the next challenge the utilities face is what do they do now that the savings they can claim from LED fixtures is diminishing because more and more people are doing it. So this is less potential there. At the same time, utilities are facing a really kind of unprecedented demand spike. Just yesterday, the Washington Post had a big story about that, where the anticipated demand over the next 9 years has suddenly doubled.
Wow.
Both from electrification, AI is making a big impact on that. So a lot of the regulators are trying to figure out, okay, how do they manage that? one of the ways they're going to be able to do that is this idea of grid flexibility. That directly ties into lighting controls and how lighting controls can help that.
Sure.
So kind of the first wave of lighting, we reduce the connected load of the fixtures. That's easy. It makes sense. That's like a utility can look at a cut sheet and say, this 150 watt high bay will only ever pull 150 watts. So they can plan on that. One of the challenges they have in incentivizing controls is they don't really have visibility on how much that 150 watt high bay is on, and when it is on, what level is it at? So they need to be able to justify the budgets that they spend on these incentives. Many to like state commissioners who are, they're sticklers for things. So we're trying to help them give some more visibility on that. So there are kind of a couple ways that we're doing that at the DLC. One of them is I'm working directly with an ANSI, or NEMA ANSI committee, and kind of leading a working group to define a standard for a configuration report for an NLC system. The initial version of this is aimed at the retrofit market, very specifically. The idea is that once the standard is adopted and then implemented by manufacturers, at the end of a programming process or commissioning process, if you want to call it, we don't agree on what to call anything. but the idea is that once the system is up and running and the person that is setting it all up is done, they could hit a button in whatever device that they're doing that programming with, whether it's a laptop and a dedicated app, or a browser or web app over the internet, or even a mobile app on a smartphone. And then that device will pull all of the devices on the network, ask them what they're doing, and compile all that into a single report that can then be shared with the utility. So the utility can be like, okay, this particular system is installed in this project. We've organized it by space type based on the ASHRAE 90.1 list. So this particular building has, two warehouses and 15 private offices. And each one of those, those 15 private offices have 100 fixtures in them, and they're all programmed like this, and they're doing manual on, and kind of goes through that whole designation. The idea is to provide a snapshot of that system at that moment in time and how it's programmed from a high level, so that can be shared with the utility, so they can keep that record and point to it. Okay, this was programmed like this, so that means I can claim, why wattage of savings from that particular project.
Interesting.
The hope in the long run is that then that'll enable them to raise the budgets. So then we'll get more incentives, and then we keep going, and our business, our industry thrives. So that's like, that's one piece of what we're doing.
No, that's great. And I think that's one of the missing pieces to this conversation is the data. There's a lot of claims that manufacturers or integrators can make about a system, but if it's not actually being adopted the way that was intended, or if the end users are overriding the system after the fact, then those savings disappear. And so having that real time data is really, I think that's really the next step for us to be able to assess the incentives as well as just the energy savings in general.
Yeah, and I'm excited because it enables kind of long-term research on particular strategies, because you could get a group of buildings that all generate this report when those systems are installed, and then go back and check up with them regularly and then compare those different versions of that report to see, are people actually overriding the aux sensors? Are they actually changing things? Or does nobody really care and it just gets set and forgotten until something breaks? So there's some fascinating potential there, I think.
So, but in order for that to work though, you would have to be actively logging that data on the system, right? So that you could go back a year later or 2 years later and actually pull what the system's been doing, not just a snapshot in time, right?
You could. this report is intended as a snapshot, just a snapshot that's not stored. So the idea is the system stores some information about itself. The big difference is, you know, each network system gets organized in some way, usually by room. I don't know of any system that actually stores what the type of that room is. So like when you select a, you know, Ron's office, doesn't say it's a private office. So there's a little bit more data to input at the beginning for that. But the idea is that we're not doing continuous monitoring on things. We're not doing any of that kind of stuff, which is great. And people do that. And that's like, there are other programs that do that. But the idea is just to take some snapshots in time and see how things changed, even if we don't know what the arc of that change is in the middle.
So you're not, as far as information, I mean, there are definitely some great resources out there if you want that active, like, this is exactly what's happening right now. But, you know, I think this does kind of align with a lot of recommendations regarding lighting controls in general, which is a follow-up of some kind. You know, whether it's 5-10 years down the road, you want to make sure that, you know, the system's still functional. And because lighting control systems will evolve over time, as well as the needs of the occupants of the space will evolve over time, you know, a lot of lighting controls are not set it and forget it anymore. It really requires somebody to make sure that it continues to be maintained. And so this is just an additional resource to support that argument for maintenance.
Yeah, and it's, the maintenance thing is interesting. Lighting maintenance used to be a thing that everybody accepted, and we did. And then we invented LEDs, and everybody was like, oh, great, we don't have to deal with it anymore. And like, yeah, no, actually you do. And then I think as an industry, we need to get back to the point where lighting maintenance is an accepted thing, and that includes controls, particularly as we get into networking those controls, because my experience has been that those networks need a bit of maintenance, even if it's as simple as just turning the circuit off and restarting the stupid thing so it actually comes back.
Right.
Like, there's just stuff that happens. And then, like, and actually, I think there's some fascinating business model potential there, particularly as the industry gets into HVAC integration, because that industry has regular maintenance. Like, they have a whole infrastructure that's designed to do that. So can we partner with those companies and train their guys to do the lighting maintenance as well, because they're already in the building? Like, so there are some really interesting things there that we can get to in the future. We haven't, you know, it's on the list. We have a lot of stuff on our list. And I get paid to sit around and think about lighting controls, so I make lots of lists.
So the answer is we put a filter in every light, just like in an HVAC system, and then people have to go back. Right? Yeah. I mean, that fixes everything.
Yeah. So the other big thing I'm working on here. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'd say the other big thing I'm working on here is a related tool specifically aimed at retrofit projects in small and medium buildings. So there are 5.9 million commercial buildings in the country, and 5.5 million of them are smaller than 50,000 square feet. Like, that is a huge market. We're addressing it today to a certain extent, although from some 2018 numbers, only about a third of those buildings have any kind of lighting control strategy implemented beyond a switch. So, like, huge. So one of the unique things about that market, which is different than the specification market and new construction, and a lot of the larger projects that you guys work on and do pixel mapping and fun stuff, is the staff on those projects are much smaller. These are projects that don't have engineers. They don't have lighting designers. A lot of them are driven by a trade ally or local engineer who works with an incentive program who, like, drives down the street and knocks on doors. So those people are very good at what they do, at installing fixtures and working with these incentive programs. But they don't all know about lighting, because they're not lighting geeks like I am. So the thought is, how can we take some of the lighting expertise that the DLC has in particular and make that available to some of these people who are doing these small projects and provide benefits to kind of everybody at the same time. So that's taken the form of a web app that we are working on developing that will produce a project-specific report. The basic concept is the Trade Ally uploads the results of a site survey, potentially from a tool like SnapCount or one of their competitors, done by Excel, kind of wherever, however they do it, answer some questions about the project itself. What is the priority for the owner? Is it to save as much energy as possible? Is it to not potentially disturb their occupants? Do they want scheduling or not? If you're in California, do you need Title 24? General questions like that. And then hit a button, and the magic of the internet and algorithms and all that stuff will produce this report that describes that project. It includes who's involved in it, a contact list for that project. The Trade Ally would select the system that they're using and the individual products that they're using for that project, at which the system will go and check that against a new QPL that we're developing to make sure that those products are both listed as efficient LEDs and associated with the control system that they're using. So we're kind of making sure that basically the manufacturers will submit a list of part numbers that work with control system A, and we'll check to make sure those part numbers are on that and that they're listed in the SSL program, and then produce a bill of materials that shows that those are all verified. That's included in the report. The utility then uses that to speed up their verification process, because then they don't have to go through and try to find the part numbers on our list. Mm-hmm. So we're saving time there. But one of the big things it'll do is it'll generate a basic sequence of operations for that project.
Nice.
Which is admittedly directly goes against LP16 and the kind of the recommendations that the IIS has come out with. But my argument there is that these are projects that will never have a lighting center.
Yes,
and
sure.
The complexity of them is much smaller. Mm-hmm. And I think it's better to make some adjustments and put out a document that is potentially less accurate than try to make a journeyman electrician go through and get an owner's product requirement document and like a control intent narrative and all that. Like, this is not going to happen.
Sure.
So it'll have a sequence of operations. It'll have a breakdown of all the products that go in each space that the electricians can use on site. The idea being they can hand a piece of paper to one of their electricians and say, go do that room. And it has all of the information that that person needs to know to install and program the products in that room. And then it'll have leave behind sheets for the occupants of that room. My experience has been most of the problems that control projects have had mainly revolve around mismatched expectations with the occupants. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, you've got an office, you've had the office for 20 years, and you come in one day, Monday morning, and suddenly all the lights are different, and they work differently, and they turn off on you, and they have no idea what's going on. And that's pretty upsetting. So how can we develop a device, say a piece of paper that's taped next to the switch on the wall, or rather the wall station, because we want to get rid of the switches, that explains, okay, you've got a new system. This is how it works. You have to push the button to turn the light on when you walk in. The lights will turn off when you leave. Daylight harvesting is enabled, so enjoy your view. You might see the lights dim at some point. But the whole idea is to put that all together into one big PDF and blast it to everybody involved in the project, so that we can improve that communication. So people actually, hopefully, will have that document when they get to installation.
Huh.
It's interesting. It's a big undertaking.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it sounds like a big undertaking. It very much sounds to me, though, like the perfect
or not application, but the perfect group for this is the distributors, right? I mean, you've probably got more distributors in any given area than you do sales reps, and dealers like myself who don't, you know, necessarily specialize in white lighting. There are so many, you know, distributors around. They have the sales force to be that sort of boots on ground to go knock on doors and say, hey, here's this magic incentive and here's all this stuff. And I'm going to fill out this magic app and we're going to generate a system for you and we're going to make it work. So it sounds like really that might be the best sort of target market to kind of push this whole thing forward once incentives are really in place. I think that's the big thing, right? Is getting the incentives lined up.
We got it. Yeah, there are a bunch of pieces. We have to have the incentive programs need to be lined up and use that. We have to get the manufacturers to give us some more product data and actually like make those connections. Of course, the utilities won't use it until there's product data, and the manufacturers won't give us product data until the utilities are using it. So it's some back and forth on that. We're trying to make it all happen at the same time. The primary user for this tool right now is the incentive applicant, and that could be somebody at the distributor level. It could be somebody at the contractor level. It really varies. But then future versions, I've already got plans for a point of sale version of this product, of this tool. The scenario there being, okay, somebody walks up to the counter distributor and says, I need, you know, 2 dozen flat panels. Mm-hmm. And the distributor's like, yeah, great, no problem. Hey, look, I've got 2 dozen flat panels that have sensors and controllers in them. I can give you this great incentive on these. Just tell me a little bit about the project you're doing. And we're just collecting room type, number of devices in the room, and if there are any switches, then that generates a really, really basic sequence of operations that gets printed out and it just like goes out the door with them. So they at least have something, some guidance on best practices for programming this stuff. And maybe that includes free wall stations or whatever, like whatever the incentive works out to be. There are a bunch of different versions for doing that. We also have potential for verification interfaces on the back end. So many utilities actually send somebody out to inspect a project. Yep. And they like go around counting lights. I've been told many times a lot of the staff that end up doing those inspections don't really know anything about lighting. Yeah. So it's a challenge for them to identify the different lights. It's like, all right, well, we could provide, if we already have the product data or project data and we have the product data, we can provide an interface where they walk into a room, they select that room off a list, it shows them a picture of what they're looking for and has them verify the numbers. Like there are a lot of different aspects that we can do. And the DLC is really uniquely positioned in the market and in the industry to be able to do that in a neutral way.
Right.
Without favoritism.
Well, and you've also got the database going on in the background already. Yeah, exactly. So it's not like you need to knock on the manufacturer's doors and say, hey, I need a picture of your fixture. You've already got it on your QPL.
Right. Yeah. Oh, there's less of knocking on their doors, though. I keep asking them for things.
I mean, that's just database management in general. But as far as things go, like you're halfway there already, which is really exciting because, you know, I think this is really the next step to our process. You know, as much as I'd like to say, you know, every project in the world should have a lighting designer involved, it's not going to happen. And additionally, to have this ivory tower approach to lighting design where only the lighting designers can do anything regarding lighting really prevents, you know, the lower cost budget or the lower budget projects from really benefiting from that knowledge. I mean, we've got so much knowledge in this industry at people's fingertips. That's just, you know, people need to know where to look for it. And so having a resource like this right at the distributor or wherever people are purchasing the equipment, and all they need is a little bit of information regarding their project, I think that's a really great way of getting that outreach. And additionally, getting that education that a lot of people on this podcast say needs to happen because of the fact that you're tying the sale to that educational initiative. It's not just oh, here's why you need to buy it. It's okay, you've bought it. Here's all you need to know about what you just bought.
Right.
Exactly. And we're not like, there are a lot of details as far as programming it. And I firmly believe that the reps are the people that are best suited to teach those things.
Sure.
Like the details of programming a specific system, that's not us. But I think there's a lot of, there's some general concepts that we can help communicate. The LCA can help communicate things. I've come up with this idea of, so there are basically three major steps to take in setting up a control system. You've got to build your network. You have to organize the devices in that network in some way, and then you apply your strategies. And if we can explain things in that concept, that makes it really easy, and it takes some of that complexity and out of, let me phrase that. We're not taking the complexity out of the system. Like, those right. systems are complex, and they have a certain amount of complexity. The question really is, where do you put that? And do you expose that to the user? And I think the kind of first generation of systems, particularly network systems, exposed all of that. Like, mm-hmm. exposed all of that complexity to the user, so it becomes very intimidating unless you are versed in it. Manufacturers have gotten much, much better at putting that complexity into a software program or an interface so you don't see it so much, but still have the ability to program the system in a way that you, the way you need to. So it's kind of doing the same thing with that web app. So you take the complexity of generating a sequence of operations and checking out these qualifications of these fixtures and put that all in the computer, which is really good at things like that, hide it from the user and generate things automatically. It limits your flexibility in some way. So that's why we're targeted at small buildings in the retrofit market.
Sure.
Yeah, well, but I mean, again, you know, there's hopefully the larger projects already have somebody involved who knows what they're doing
right.
and doesn't need this automate process supporting them. And so, you know, what are the obstacles that you foresee with the adoption of this? I mean, there's already resistance regarding networked lighting controls, but maybe, you know, something we were just talking about with Craig DeLuey, we just had him on in the previous episode, you know, it's the carrot and the stick. So we've got the carrot, which is the incentives and all of this support coming in. You know, are you gonna see the need for a stick in this regard as well?
Potentially. I'd rather work on the side of reducing barriers and
sure.
you know, making this mm-hmm. carrot a little easier to get to.
Yeah.
I think one concept that I listened to Craig's episode this morning, actually. one quibble with what he said is there's a distinction in NLCs and LLCs that we don't really talk about, I think, much, or we're not very good at talking about, where an NLC or an LLC type system don't need to be complicated and they don't need to be connected to anything else.
Sure, right.
So one of the criteria for the program I'm working on that we are calling NLC local is that system is capable of operating without a connection to any other system. So if it's basically a network and island operation. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it cannot be connected, but the system needs to be capable of doing it on its own. So a Bluetooth NLC system with a controller and a sensor on every luminaire and wall stations that operates by itself is an LLC system. And the uphill climb to get that system up and running is actually not that big and doesn't right. necessarily involve a bunch of data generation. Because when you generate data, you have to figure out what to do with it, to get it where you're going to store it, who's going to actually look at it, all of that. And small buildings just don't have that capacity. What's interesting, though, is in many cases, those exact same products can be used in a fully connected LLC system that generates a whole bunch of data and like tracks your heart monitors in a hospital and newborns and like all this craziness. Like, that's great. And those are awesome. And you guys should work on those. But we don't need that. But
right.
where it gets difficult to talk about is that it's the same product number. It's the same part number that's doing both of those things. And it's about the application of that system in a specific project. And it's like, it's just hard. It's difficult to make that distinction. So I'm trying to, that's one of the things I'm working on is like, how do you talk about it? And I've kind of settled on this networked versus connected language, where a network system is where the devices all talk to each other. We have those benefits of a network that we all, the internet, and that we all talk about. But a connected network system is a system that does all that and then is connected to other things, HVAC, the internet, all of that business.
I think that's a really good distinction to make. And I really want to clarify what you just said, because I think this is something that people do confuse oftentimes when they first get into lighting controls, is what a networked lighting control system is. And so I remember at Light Fair last year, I had a discussion with somebody who said that, you know, they were a very skilled person in lighting controls, and that we got into a debate about whether a networked lighting control system required a network router. And so in a lot of lighting control systems do not require actual category cable connecting the devices for it to work. A network of lighting controls is just interconnections of lighting control devices. I mean, some NLCs use Dolly as their bus to communicate. Others use RS-45 type protocols or other types that are not IP protocols, not internet protocols. Right. And so connected, which is the word you used, means, okay, this is actually connecting out to the world via the internet, but it still may not use an IP for its network bus. It may still be a Dolly loop for the network bus. It just might have a gateway that takes the information from the system and spits it out to the world via the internet.
And to make it even more complicated, the network itself may or may not have a centralized controller that makes it work.
Right.
So a Dolly system or a Zigbee system needs, I liken it to a conductor in an orchestra.
Like, sure.
There is some device there that makes sure everything stays in time and works it. Whereas a Bluetooth mesh system does not have that device and is more like a jazz band, where everybody's kind of listening to each other and reacting to that. So it's, there's so many different layers, and a lot of them get into very technical aspects of the systems themselves. It makes it hard to talk in general terms without alighting something.
And totally.
Sometimes that gets problematic.
Right. And I think, you know, this is another thing that comes up a lot in this podcast is, you know, lack of consistency with terminology and how terminology can actually obfuscate important information, such as using the term networked. Because outside of our industry, the word networked does mean connected to the internet or using an IP to use interconnectivity. And so we like to take terms from outside our industry and use them for our own purposes, but they actually don't mean what outside the industry it means to use them for. We use them for our own purposes and definitions. So I think, you know, again, going along those points, it sounds like a lot of education is also being put behind this initiative so that there is consistency at the almost layman level, I would say, you know, and that is something that our industry really struggles with, is being able to communicate and educate to the layman. We can certainly have these conversations between the three of us where we're talking super technically, but then if somebody outside the industry starts watching, they're going to be like, what the heck are these guys talking about?
I mean, one of my goals with the whole program is to create some wraparound materials to enable that kind of communication. One of the things I'm working on this week is a best practices guide for lighting control strategies. I talked to a lot of contractors, and several of them told me they're hesitant to work with an NLC incentive program because the utilities don't publish any definitions on what it means to implement high-end trim or occupancy sensing or daylight. Like, what is that? They're like, okay, so like if I set my high end trim to 98%, is like, do I still get credit for that? And so they're hesitant because they're afraid that they're going to spend a bunch of money on a system, and then they won't get the incentive that they're expecting. And
Right.
for small contractors, that's a big problem. So working on a document that defines that, okay, like high-end trim in many cases is binary as far as what the utility will recognize. So the answer to that is yes, a 98% high-end trim value would be accepted. That's bad. Here's the range that it should be at. Stuff like that. So, and trying to write in a way that is accessible to, you can call them laymen. I think the audience is electrical contractors who are very good at what they do, and most of the time, what they do is somewhat different than this. Yeah. So.
So taking the ideas of network and connected and gateway and all these words that mean other things and other right and other systems, how do you see a path forward that whether it's us or somebody else, what is the path to try and standardize some of this terminology within the lighting industry?
I mean, I would love if the DLC published a glossary and we were like, this is what you should call it all, and then we can everybody can argue about that for days. It's kind of a situation of defining your terms and being very deliberate about things. Kind of every major organization has some kind of glossary document. So like the IAS has their terms of definitions, NEMA has theirs. They all have holes. So some of it is like, okay, how can we complement those? What organizations can, what other organizations can do it? I don't know that we need like, one standard to rule them all, because that never works. I think it's a matter of it's defining your terms. It's making sure that like you identify when you're speaking that this is the context that I'm speaking at. When you get into situations where you're talking with somebody and like it's clear that you're not really communicating or they have a different idea of what you're doing, don't be defensive. Just stop and be like, hey, I'm using this word in this way. This means I think this means that. Like, what do you think? And then eventually, I think we'll coalesce around something. Also, maybe a translator table or some kind. But then, then you have to figure out, okay, what's the audience you're writing that for? How technical does that need to get?
Right.
My thought is, it just needs to work. Like,
Sure.
my experience with the general public is they don't care about lighting and they don't care about lighting controls. We've basically trained the world to expect that when they walk into a room, there is a switch on the wall that is opposite the hinge on the door. And if there's nothing there, they're like, what the heck? How do I do this? Like, but as long as there's something there and the way that operates matches the idiomatic way that we've learned that light switches operate, we're good. One of the interesting things is then, once you get past that step of initially turning the lights on or being able to turn the lights on when you walk in a room, depending on how you design the interface, you can design access to much more advanced features that someone who has been trained or been told about that feature can access, but that don't get in the way of an untrained person being able to turn the lights on. And I think that touches a whole bunch of layers from product design to implementation on a specific project to programming. So there's like there's a whole bunch of stuff involved in that. But I think it's as long as we can do the basic thing of meeting people's expectations of being able to turn the lights on and off when they want to, like that's going to go a long way towards our whole industry's reputation, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. We're almost out of time here, but I just want to like summarize this because this is really great to hear. I really love initiatives like this. It can only help motivate our industry to do better in the future to have these resources. So, just to encapsulate this, I mean, The DLC for a long time had been focused on just LED efficiencies, but because of the fact that we've, per that conversation with Craig DeLuey in the last episode, we've won that argument. LEDs are the dominant force when it comes to sales and lighting, not necessarily the dominant existing lighting force, but we are seeing, basically widespread adoption at this point. So how do we move that needle even further? And there is a lot of concern regarding moving that needle because of the fact that we have, huge initiatives regarding decarbonization and the fact that electrification is putting a massive strain on our grid system. And so, because lighting controls can really be a part of that conversation, we want to get even the smaller groups, the smaller buildings, the smaller projects to adopt networked lighting controls. And when I say networked, I'm not saying connected to the internet. All I'm saying is that it's an interconnected system that can respond to information adaptively. And so, as a result, okay, the definition we can work on, but regardless, the goal here is to get widespread adoption of networked lighting controls, because right now we just have a switch on the wall in a lot of cases. And so getting people to go, oh, there's a benefit to this in the same way that people did when LEDs came out, we hopefully can get more adoption of that and more energy efficiency in the end. And so the DLC is trying to generate a lot of resources to support that initiative, such as generating an automated sequence of operations, which is something that is constantly missing from project documentation, especially if you don't have a lighting designer involved. But that single document could be the guiding force to ensuring that a lighting control system is installed and programmed to the needs of the space. So having that generated alongside the sale point with whoever's making that sale to the end user or the installer, that can really support the project in a lot of ways. And additionally, all of this focus on incentives and definitions and education can only help bolster that because of the fact that there still is a lot of misunderstanding and disinformation regarding lighting controls out there. The only question is, which groups do we leverage for this? How do we get the word out? How do we get people to go and support this initiative the same way that we had, distributors supporting the initiative of LED adoption and having the utilities create incentives for that. So, it is a more complex puzzle than just, oh, one-to-one swapping LEDs with, over fluorescence with LEDs or something like that, because you don't have the same kind of metrics. And so having that ability to measure as well, so that when you install something and then you come back later to check on the installed system, you can confirm, oh, yep, it's still operating as it should be. Or, that's the opportunity. Let's say, for instance, there's a service group that's doing that check-in. They can then have that conversation for additional labor, and they can make an additional sale on top of that if they're like, oh, we really don't like it programmed like this. Please reprogram it to something else. And you can get those people who aren't normally familiar with lighting controls, more familiar with lighting controls so that they can support that. So, I mean, holistically, this is a massive undertaking that you're at the very beginnings of. But I think it's a really fantastic initiative to carry this forward. So I fully support this, and I'm really intrigued to see where you go with this.
That's great. Please tell everybody you know to support that too, because
I certainly will.
it's getting over to the hump to get get things in development is proving a little challenging, but we're working on it.
It's definitely an undertaking. Like that's it's great to hear, Jason. And it's funny. It's so I'm sure I don't know if our listeners pick up on some of this stuff sometimes, but this was not you was not planned for you to come on after Craig. We didn't look ahead at guests and say, we're gonna have Craig and then we're gonna have Jason. Like, right, Craig, we had to push a couple times and one commitment issues. It just happened to line up this way. And it fascinates me every time that we have these conversations that feel like this was intentionally planned, that this happened after and
and connect back to each
it
other.
right? Completely by chance. But it's fascinating to hear because you are the second person in 2 weeks to go ahead and tell us how many buildings there are, under that square footage, where it's the majority of the smaller buildings that don't have any controls, that don't have lighting designers, that don't have, and that's where, that's where all of this really is going to be. That's where the bulk of that output is going to be from. That's where we can have the most adoption and get in. But you, without a lighting designer, without a team in place on a new project, you've got to find a way to get in. And that's going to have, it's going to have to be some sort of, the incentives have to be there, you know, boots on ground, sort of grassroots, people knocking on doors. Hey, you know, do you want to talk about your system? Here's these incentives. I'd really love to help you with this project. And if we can, if you can get that and get that app going, I think, you know, some real progress could really be made. And it's great to hear. And I'm curious, we didn't ask, and I know it's probably a crazy question. Do you have any sort of timeline on sort of getting that out to market?
That is a controversial question in within the DLC right now. We are working with a few utilities to do a, call it like an alpha pilot this year. You know, utilities are very deliberate organizations. And particularly when it comes to energy savings measures. So we're kind of working it through their R&D process as a new measure. So like lighting controls is a measure, LEDs is a measure, heat pumps is a measure. So kind of a new thing like that. It should go faster than that process usually goes because it's not totally new. So that step of the process is we're developing the interface for the app that'll collect the project data, but we're not doing the back end that'll actually generate the report yet. For this portion, that's going to be me in Excel, which is very exciting. it takes a little while to do it, but I've worked it out. So it's like the goal there is to get the product is really this report, and to get that into people's hands on actual projects and being able to see the value of it. I've also been told that no utility wants to be the first one to do something.
Yeah.
They want to be the second one, and then they'll all be the second one at the same time. So the goal is that we can get this up and running with a couple small R&D projects with a couple utilities, demonstrate the value of it, and then everybody will start knocking on our doors for it. Then it's a matter of how fast can we get the development out, hopefully in a few months after that. And then it's a matter of rolling those out into incentive programs with utilities. Many utilities will operate on an annual schedule. So they start new programs on January 1st. Some of them have the flexibility to be able to start whenever they can. So it really varies. I mean, I would love to see it done this year. It's probably going to be first or second quarter of next year before we have a fully developed solution. We're a nonprofit. It's coming from the commercial world. It's been a little bit of a transition into how fast nonprofits work, but hopefully we'll get some good reactions from this conversation, and that'll help light a fire, and we can move a little faster.
I love it. Well, Jason, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time today. Appreciate you coming on. It's been a great conversation, a fantastic follow-up to the conversation we had with Craig. Can't wait to see where this all goes. I just want to take a minute to remind everyone that today's episode was presented by the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
And is financially supported by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Check out our website if you have not seen it before. We've got lots of great stuff on there, including this new council that we're starting up on startup and integrations, trying to get the definitions down and getting ways to find integrators in your area. Additionally, if you want to learn more about lighting controls, we have our trainings resource that's starting to grow right now. So check it out. But until then, thank you so much for joining us. And Jason, thank you. This was really awesome to hear about.